All right, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome back into the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone as we welcome in from Hail Varsity, Jacob Padilla. Good Thursday morning. We'll start because I want you and George to have a conversation. I'm just going to sit back and I'll let you start with the day in the NBA yesterday.
Yeah, that was certainly interesting, pretty eventful middle of the day there. Kind of got in the way of me getting some work done, but that's okay sometimes. That was going to be fun to kind of see how all the fallout of yesterday's deals and kind of how I know Sean Marks said today that he's not done yet with their rosters, so see kind of what else he has in store to kind of round that thing out, and good luck to Steve Nash, that's for sure.
Should we blame what happened yesterday on LeBron James?
I don't know that I'd blame it on anybody. I guess if anybody's to blame, the combination of James Harden and maybe Tillman Fertitta, just kind of that whole situation getting so toxic that Harden just refused to even consider playing with Houston after this past offseason. So, yeah, I don't know. As a longtime Phoenix Suns fan dealing with Robert Sarver, I think one of the biggest issues with the league and with certain franchises is poor ownership. That's the biggest competitive disadvantage in the league, and Houston certainly kind of seeing the impact of that right now.
I mean, I think of everything that LeBron James has done in his career, and even with what the Nets did yesterday, I think the Lakers are still the favorite, but he was the first to have player empowerment and to say, this is where I want to go. You know, he was a free agent, so it wasn't like he was part of the Cavaliers and forced himself out. But I think that shift to the power of the superstar player really set the baseline for how it changed the NBA, that you could have a situation like yesterday where James Harden didn't want to be in Houston. You know, he kind of created that mess, but yet he ate himself out of Houston and got himself to Brooklyn and kind of left, you know, Houston in a little bit of a mess, much poorer than they were with Harden on their roster. I don't know. I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. It's great for the NBA because of you get the sense that this is a league that has more teams compared to a couple of the other professional sports that are all in on winning. But it's also where it's a lot easier to force your way out of a team, and it leaves that fan base that you just left from, upset and disappointed and thinking, why do I root for these guys?
Yeah, and that's the tough part of being a sports fan, particularly a pro sports fan. That's possible to happen at any time. You can get a really good player, and if things don't go well, they don't particularly like it there, and they don't like some of the people in the organization, and they decide they want out. There's not a ton they can do. You just got to hope that you get a good return when you end up shipping the guy out. So it's unfortunate, but I'm not going to be mad at the players for realizing the power they have. And so you don't love kind of the way Harden went about it and the things that happened with Jimmy Butler, and I don't think those aren't good looks for the league, but at the same time, like, I'm not going to be mad at them for kind of flexing the power they do have. And then we also saw a situation with Victor Oladipo there, who didn't make quite nearly as much noise and wasn't as destructive in his efforts to move on to a new franchise, and he got traded as well. And I think Indiana ended up with a pretty good return on that, considering Oladipo wasn't going to resign there, and Caris LeVert's got two more years and is a pretty good player. So we'll see how all this falls out, but I think probably all three teams are in a better place than they were yesterday. Brooklyn certainly. It's very combustible, but they raise their ceiling. Anytime you've got three of the best players in the league, you're going to have a chance.
Mm-hmm. Jacob Padilla joining us here. Let's shift to football. Will Honus says he's coming back within the last hour. It has been quite the week of Husker personnel news. You got a couple of new additions. You got a rather large subtraction. You got some guys that are saying, I'm still in. Don't erase me from your scholarship distribution chart. So as we sit here on Thursday, and there's one senior decision to be made, and that is Ben Stille. Did Nebraska stay the same this week, get better, or take a step back?
I'd say they probably that's a tough one considering we don't know particularly a couple of the guys on offense coming in, what that picture is going to look like. The defense has a chance to be to take another step forward, that's for sure. And I think kind of this offseason move point to just kind of paint the picture of where Nebraska's at on both sides of the ball. I wrote my Wednesday column about the Wandale Robinson departure and kind of what that means for Nebraska and kind of the perception and everything like that. It doesn't paint a great picture about just where this offense is and the connection there from coach and players and the trust in player and system and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that it changed in two quick years after one year probably, mm-hmm. Because of how all in Wandale Robinson seemed to be. But defensively, these guys are definitely buying into Eric Chenander's vision and they're continuing to get better. And I don't think it's a surprise that all the guys coming back are on the defensive side of the ball because that side of the ball is continuing to get better and seems like they've really got things figured out. They still need to need a few more game-changing type of plays. They still need to be a little bit better in big situations. And I think part of that might still just be the kind of lack of the true top-end talent, especially as far as edge rushers go. But the defense is definitely moving in the right direction, and they've got a chance to be pretty darn salty next year.
What's the difference of opinion on Eric Chenander from this time last year to today?
I certainly hope that people take notice, because obviously I think the perception when Scott Frost and his staff came to Lincoln was obviously people were incredibly high on Frost and his offense and his play calling, and that's the reason why he got hired and the staff got this job. And people were hesitant about Chenander and the defense, in large part because I'm sure a lot of people were watching that Memphis game in the ACC and kind of saw the points per game numbers on the defense, and that they weren't great at UCF, but came to Lincoln and they've continued to kind of upgrade the talent and to build something pretty darn good. So he's certainly doing his job, and I hope people recognize the progress that the team is making on that side of the ball.
Jacob Dilla joining us. All right, let's shift to Wandale Robinson. I don't know if you've got MapQuest out on your computer right now, but from his home to Lexington, Kentucky is not very far. His home from in the state of Kentucky to West Lafayette seems to be about 4 hours. I'm trying to piece things together here. As you know, that's a loss for Nebraska. If Wandale Robinson, and it, you know, we're all said, okay, he's going to go to Kentucky. When Steve Wiltfong of 24/7 says it's 50-50, either Kentucky or Purdue, whoa, wait a minute. Purdue is in the mix? How uncomfortable would that October 16th game in West Lafayette be if Wandale Robinson was playing for Purdue and not Kentucky?
Yeah, that would certainly raise the angst around here quite a bit. And I wouldn't be shocked if something like that happened. I think the Wandale said all the right things in his statement and certainly not downplaying the situation with his mom. And that's very serious. And health of family, that always takes precedent. But at the same time, you listen to, you read the quote he gave to Adam Rittenberg at ESPN.
Yep.
And he said there that it's 50-50 between his mom's situation and the football. And I think that kind of lets you know how much that actually had to do with it and just kind of where the situation at Nebraska had gotten. And it just seems like he lost faith in Frost's ability to maximize his game and get him ready for the next level. And it's something like I didn't understand the usage of him either. It just seemed like they weren't very creative. They weren't very trusting. And I don't know if that was because of him or it's because of the quarterback situation. I think that had a large part to do with it. Anytime they actually did throw him down a catchable ball downfield, he seemed to come down with it. I didn't quite understand why they didn't use him more as an actual wideout and give him a chance to run some routes. Because with his ability after the catch to avoid defenders, you would have to think that translates a little bit to his route running and his ability to create separation with the way that he can plant his foot and cut and change directions and all that. He's definitely smaller. You're not going to be throwing him jump balls, but he's a guy that I would think would be able to get open over the middle and down the field and some of that. And Nebraska just rarely used him that way. Mm-hmm. I think Brandon Vogel is kind of looking through the numbers, and I believe he got the most touches of anybody in the country over the last 2 years, and by far produced the least with it. And I think that has as much or more to do with the way Nebraska used him than his individual talent. So Nebraska sold him on coming here to Lincoln and kind of being their Rondale Moore, being anybody that Frost has had in his system that has thrived, and they couldn't do it. So if he moves on and actually goes to Purdue and Jeff Brohm does actually get that kind of production out of him, that's going to be a really bad look for the folks in Lincoln.
Well, he would go and he would team up with David Bell, who's one of the top wide receivers in the Big Ten. It's not easy to replace that amount of usage. Is there a next man up, you think, that would fit into the role of who might have the most usage rate on the 21 roster on that side of the ball?
Yeah, that's the question at this point. Is we're really excited about the guys that you were bringing in last year. I personally thought because of the pieces they brought in, they had a chance to actually have a pretty to take a big step forward on offense and be much more well-rounded with the guys like Omar Manning and Xavier Betts and Alante Brown and all these guys they're bringing in addition to Wandale. And that didn't materialize. So now we're kind of waiting in wait and see mode at wide receiver. And I think we'll see kind of who can step into the Wandale role as kind of the slot slash backfield guy, the duck R role. Maybe if Will Nixon recovers fully, he's a guy that can do some damage there. I don't expect anybody to be used both the way that Wandale was in terms of the sheer volume and that kind of thing. It's going to have to be by committee. But I think they're probably counting a lot on Samori Toure to come in here and make a difference. And I think you said it too, like, Omar Manning, until he actually steps foot on the field and starts playing, you can't really count on him at this point. So hopefully Xavier Betts makes a big step forward and they find more ways to get him involved. On one side, you got Toure coming in. I'm guessing he's not coming here to ride the bench, so you probably look at him as one of your other starters. You got the two tight ends, Austin Allen and Travis Vokolek, and then you'll see how Thomas Fedoni makes a difference. So they've got some pieces for sure that can step up and be good players, but we kind of felt that way last year. So they're going to have to go out and prove it this year before you have any kind of good feeling or confidence in them taking a step forward.
This is down the road here in the spring, but if you're looking solely at offense, who in your opinion has to have the best spring on the offensive side of the ball?
It's got to be Adrian Martinez. I think a lot of their issues have stemmed from the quarterback play. And I think like I said, with the Wando Robinson thing, I think a lot of that probably was the coaching staff's trust in the quarterbacks and their ability to consistently make downfield throws and to find guys on the option routes and the type of stuff that Wandale wanted to run. And then obviously the turnovers too. You need him to take a step forward. He's got to be able to make the simple throws. He's got to be able to make the right decisions, the right reads, and to not give the ball back. That's the most frustrating thing. That Rutgers game, you take away those four turnovers, and that was the best game Adrian Martinez has ever played. He was phenomenal throwing the ball, making the right plays with his legs. He was completing passes at multiple levels. But then those four turnovers were so bad that it's just hard to kind of see that game that way and to have a good feeling coming out of it, because this is him at the end of year three. What's going to change next year? Is this who he is? So if they get really steady quarterback play, I think the offense has a chance to take a leap forward. I think guys in that offensive line will continue to progress. We'll see if they've got anybody ready to kind of step up and improve what they got from last year. You've got, again, pieces at wide receiver. We'll see if the coaches can find ways to get them on the field and get them involved. I don't know what to think at all about the running back situation, so it's hard to single out any one person there. And I think the tight end room has made as much progress as any room on that team. So I think it all starts with the quarterback play, and if he's kind of limiting them and holding them back, it's hard to see a path forward here with this group.
Let's shift to basketball. Impact of some time off now for Nebraska, because of the COVID case, they have to be put on pause. Probably won't play again. You hope they hope they'll be able to play in less than a week when they take on Minnesota. But is there a positive to having a shutdown for about 10 days this time of the year?
That's tough. I don't think so. A break from losing is never necessarily a bad thing, but I also think they need to just play. The problem is they just need to keep getting better together as a team and keep figuring things out. And all this stuff that have been causing them problems, those things aren't going to go away by not playing basketball. Mm-hmm. The only way they're going to fix that stuff is by continuing to play, continuing to gain that experience to see firsthand what's working and what's not, and to gain that trust in what they need to do to win these games. So I don't really see it as a positive. Hopefully guys can kind of get rested up and watch a lot of film, and hopefully they can kind of learn a few things while they've got to take a seat for a bit. But I don't think you can really spin it into that much of a positive outside of maybe a break from kind of the mental strain of losing.
And I think there's the negative part. You would love to have Derek Walker, who, you know, still working to get in game shape, actually playing games after I thought he had a very encouraging debut against Indiana, but you'd like him to have more activity on the floor to get into shape and also to get the familiarity with his teammates.
Yeah, that's I can't believe it. Like, he's getting so excited, and then his first game back gets postponed. Comes out, plays, shows some things. Obviously, you could see the significant rust and some of the stamina issues early on. It got better as the game went on, but you could also see where he's going to be able to help this team and some of the plays he made that none of the other bigs on the roster can play at this stage. And then after the game, you find out, well, you got to wait at least another week or so before you're going to get back out there. So the kind of the stop and start nature of his career at Nebraska at this point can't be easy on the guy. So I certainly feel for him more than anybody else on that team, just kind of the timing of everything. But I do think once they get back on the court, as he continues to work himself back into shape and into a game rhythm and kind of gets used to the speed of the game again and all that kind of stuff, he's definitely going to be able to help. You can see, heck, that his first bucket, mm-hmm. kind of the pick and roll catch, extend and finish with the left hand around a defender. That Nebraska wasn't getting that in the first however many games. So looking forward to seeing kind of how he progresses and the offense progresses with him. Just hope that everybody can get healthy and get back into a great place so they can get back to work.
And playing in a conference which doesn't give you many off nights, but there is still, you know, I think a couple weeks ago we talked about, okay, where are they going to find a win? Northwestern at the time was playing well, but Northwestern loses their fourth straight last night to Ohio State, and they look more like the 13th preseason team like they were projected. Let's shift to the Big East real quick. Talking about the strength of the Big Ten, and you've got Iowa and Michigan, who I think are legit Final Four teams. I think in the Big East, Creighton and Villanova, even though, you know, Villanova's good, but we don't know a lot about Villanova because they haven't played a lot of basketball, but they're still pretty good. What's your impressions of the rest of the Big East?
Yeah, it's definitely, that's clear tier at the top. The problem now is UConn certainly looked encouraging, and now James Bouknight's going to be out for a while, and that's clearly their best player and one of the best players in the Big East. He had the elbow surgery and will be out indefinitely. So I think they probably were the third best team, and now they're going to have to play without their best player. So that certainly knocks them down a bit. And then after that, I think Creighton's seen the next four teams. They've basically seen the rest of the teams and handled them except for Marquette. Mm-hmm. That game against Seton Hall was really impressive for Creighton, not really impressive for Seton Hall, the way they kind of respond to that and certainly the way they got run off the floor. So I think it's kind of that, the UConn, Seton Hall, Xavier, I think that's probably the next group. Maybe Seton Hall has a chance to kind of take a step forward here with the injuries at UConn. But I think that's kind of what you're looking for. And then that Marquette and Providence are two teams that could, in any given game, step up and beat somebody, but just don't have any consistency whatsoever. And then St. John's is just kind of what St. John's is. Yeah. They got some decent athletes, but not a great team. They can't defend. They can provide some challenges for the rest of the teams, but I don't think they're going to have a great year. And then I think the talent at the bottom there, the Butler, Georgetown, and DePaul, those three teams are at the bottom of the conference for a reason, and I think that'll probably stay that way all season. So that's kind of where I think that the Big East is at this point. It's maybe four or five teams. I don't think Marquette or Providence will be able to rally enough at this point to kind of put themselves in a tournament consideration. So I think you're probably looking at four or five teams, depending on how Connecticut rebounds from losing Bouknight and when he can return.
Yeah, that was, if you have to play UConn one more time after he scored 40 against you, you're like, oh, okay. But I think for the league, I mean, he's a dynamic player. I mean, I love having UConn in the Big East. I want him to be in the Big Ten, but having them back in the Big East, especially with basketball, I mean, it just seems right. And I think that has added so much to this league. And then when we get back to a normal period and the way UConn is recruiting, I think it's only a bonus for this league that'll make everybody else better because UConn is in it. And I think they have the formula figured out that they're going to look like the UConn we're used to.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think Hurley's doing a good job there, and I think they're happy to be back in the Big East, and certainly it's impacting their recruiting and the way they're building up the roster. So looking like they'll be a good addition for the Big East, and I'm glad it happened.
Hey, one final thing, because I was thinking about this watching the Nebraska-Indiana game the other night. Can you think of another college basketball fan base that dislikes their current head coach more than Indiana does with Archie Miller? I don't run across many IU fans that go, man, we love Coach Miller. I mean, they complain about his losses to teams that shouldn't happen. Or Sunday night it was, hey, why don't you wear a mask properly? Nothing about the stuff on the floor. It was about other things. I don't know. Is any Indiana fan happy with Archie Miller or happy with their basketball program?
I don't think so. And obviously Indiana fans have high expectations for their program, and rightfully so based on the program's history. But it's kind of bizarre just the path the Hoosiers have taken during Miller's career. Obviously, he was very successful at Dayton, built that program up to a really good place, and made the leap to Indiana. And it just hasn't worked. And it's weird because he's recruited pretty well. Yep. You look at some of the high four and five star guys he's gotten the last couple of years. He's had some really good players. Obviously, Trace Jackson Davis right now is continuing to tear it up. But for whatever reason, everything just isn't clicking, and they haven't been able to consistently win. And they're winning enough to stay out of the cellar, but they're dropping some head scratching games here and there, and not always rising to the occasion against some of the better teams. So he hasn't done poorly enough to, I think, put himself on a serious hot seat unless things really go south. But he definitely hasn't done anything to ingratiate himself to the fan base either. So it's kind of a bizarre situation, a weird spot to be in, just kind of on the outside looking in. It just isn't really working for either side right now. But it also hasn't been a complete disaster like a lot of others.
Yeah, they won 20 games last year. I mean, they were below 500 in the Big Ten, but they were, you know, they had a possibility to play themselves into the NCAA tournament. You know, when they beat Nebraska and they were going to play the next day. Jacob, as always, I appreciate it. Will we find you at Millard North Central tonight?
There's a very strong chance. I haven't quite decided what I'm going to do on Friday, but that's certainly at the top of the list right now.
All right. Good stuff. I enjoyed your coverage over the weekend from the tournament over in Council Bluffs. I think you were everywhere this weekend.
trying to make up for lost ground kind of with the COVID sit-out I had. So I think I got to 9 games last week, boys and girls, so. It was definitely fun.
Great stuff, Jacob. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Talk to you later.
That's Jacob Padilla from Hail Varsity. George, you should tag along with Jacob.
I think we'd have a good time.
You guys would have a good time. You're both basketball aficionados. I know you're jonesing to get to a high school game this year.
Yeah. I think it would. Yeah, it'd be fun. He needs an assistant, right?
Yeah, you could. He keeps stats at all the games. I mean, he is a whiz.
Mm-hmm.
Or ask to get on his podcast. Him and Damon do a high school basketball show.
Oh,
see if you can sneak in there and be the third wheel. You can be like the James Harden. Who is the third wheel in Brooklyn?
I would think it was Kyrie.
Ooh, will that go over very well?
I feel like he would enjoy that. He doesn't want to be the spotlight. He doesn't want to be the guy.
Really?
He doesn't want to be the guy answering all the questions. He's going to have some questions to answer when he actually comes back. I got some stuff that Sean Marks said that I still don't believe.
Well, you know, you can have, I think this is in a lot of industries, and I don't know how many threesomes you've ever been in, but you can have too many cooks, okay?
Yeah, that's true.
If you've got three people, whether it be like a three-man radio show or a three-woman radio show, you can have too many cooks. You've got to have a established one and a two, but the most important might be whoever is that three is comfortable being a three.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we all like, when we have threesomes, wouldn't we all like to have Chris Bosch? Chris Bosch was comfortable being the third guy. He was really good, but he didn't long to be number one and number two.
Mm-hmm.
He was okay being a number three. And you have to have, and I think about this in our business, because we have two-man shows. We don't have any, I don't believe, any three-man shows.
No.
Not everybody can be solo. But there are roles that are defined.
Yeah.
Not that it means that you're greater than the person you're with, but you know that, okay, as a designated one, a two, or a three, you've got different things that you must do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably Chris Bosch doesn't get enough credit for that in Miami.
He really doesn't.
He was okay being a three. Now, maybe post-career when he got jabbed a little bit, you saw him snap back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was okay understanding that that was Dwayne Wade's team. LeBron had joined it, and Bosch had joined it, and he was okay being the number three. Because as you know, George, you get in when you have three people and you got a threesome, you can't have three number ones. Nope. It just complicates things. There are too many cooks. So that's interesting you picked Kyrie as the number three, because I don't know that he's comfortable being the number three. I don't know if he's comfortable being Kyrie. Maybe that's the more pertinent question.
There it is.
All right, 11:32. Quick break, come back. We got local music. We have Brody Deren coming up at 1. We'll do a deep dive into Creighton, who has been off since Saturday. They go to Indianapolis this weekend. I think I just saw that game has been changed again. So tip-off was going to be at 1, then went to 3, and now it's back to 1. I have not checked the COVID list. There may have been a game that has been postponed in the Big East this weekend that has moved the Creighton game back to 1.
Oh.
Flexible. That's what they say, George. Got to be flexible. I mean, look at Omaha hockey has been all over the map.
Flexibility also needed in the threesome. Chris Bosh needed to be flexible.
This is 1620 The Zone.